Well, it actually appears we're incredibly successful with that transition. So congratulations, everyone, on that. So with that, we can get back into our regular pension session. We just discussed in executive session a claim for benefits. And so with that, I'll entertain a motion for this participant's claim for benefits.
So moved.
I second that.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on Teresa Robinson's claim for benefits? I'm seeing no hands, so we'll do a roll call vote just because of Zoom. So I'll just use my screen as the list. So AJ?
Aye.
John Hampton?
Aye.
Christina Shu?
Aye.
Stephen Yet?
Aye.
John Hunt?
Yes.
And Bill Bradley, yes. So the ayes have it, unanimous. So Teresa Robinson's claim for benefits is approved. And we can move on to the next item on the agenda, which if we could share the agenda on the screen so I know what it is. I don't have enough screens to keep up. Looks like it's the minutes review, August 20th, 2020. Did everybody have a chance to review the minutes of August 20th, 2020? And if you did and you're comfortable with them, I will entertain a motion to approve the minutes, August 20. So it looks like Mr. Hunt moved it.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Yet. And I'll just do a, you know, a, does anyone disagree with that?
No.
No.
Perfect. So the minutes have been approved. And we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which appears to be reporting the investment consultant, third quarter performance updates. So we'll hand it off to Ian.
All right, I will share my screen here for you all. If somebody could let me know when that's up.
Looking good.
Okay, sounds good. Well, great to see everybody. I'll go through. I've actually all we've got on my agenda for today is just to go over Q3 numbers. I had the team do some calculations yesterday just to check where the portfolio was as of yesterday's close, just because we've you know, these numbers even just since the end of Q3 look tremendously better through just yesterday. So we'll cover the report as presented here, but I'll give you some updated figures to reflect the more positive market sentiment that we've seen in November thus far. But if we want to take a look here on page 4, just kind of a quick overview to set the stage for the figures that we are going to see through Q3. Some quick capital market update. You know, it was kind of a continuation for the most part of what the environment we saw was in Q2. So if you recall, if we do kind of a year in the rewind, right, we've got March that sold off quite dramatically. Everything was down, you know, healthy double digits, almost 30% for some equities. And then starting in April, we remarkably had a fairly strong climb back with respect to risk assets or public equities, at least. And that really did continue for the most part through Q3. We started to see some volatility enter the market for kind of the month of September, which dampened some of those quarter to date numbers that you can see in the bottom left hand box there. So that's just a bunch of broad indices that track different markets. So if we think about the S&P 500 largely representing U.S. equities, particularly large companies. You saw that the quarter-to-date number there was pretty healthy at about 9%. And the year-to-date figure got us a little bit closer to about 5.5% year-to-date. If we actually wanted to fast forward that through about yesterday, we're actually up about 13% up for the S&P 500 through yesterday. International stocks still trailing a bit. They're up about 4% for the year, but well out of the negative territory that you're seeing here as of Q3. And bonds, for the most part, are still hovering around that positive 7% margin for the year, off the heels of that really dramatic yield curve decline that you can see in that bottom right-hand chart there. So obviously you can see where the yield curve sat, the yellow line as of September, the green line as of September 2020, so a year fast forward. But you can see it really overlaid pretty tight on what the yield curve looked like in June. So on the bond side of things, at least from government-issued securities, we haven't seen much movement in the yield curve. And that really is to do with the continued amount of fiscal and monetary relief that we've seen come from the Fed. Obviously the Fed dropped interest rates on the front end right at zero or very close to zero, and interest rates along the rest of the curve followed suit pretty handedly. We have seen that tick up a bit into November with some more positive sentiment coming around things like obviously positive vaccine news. I think the markets also appreciated the potential of having a mixed Congress. So obviously we're likely to have a Democratic held president and House, but the Senate appears at least a high probability of staying controlled by the Republican Party. Markets tend to favor some kind of stability in terms of not necessarily moving dramatically from one party to the rest in terms of flipping the Senate and the House all at once. So that was a positive sentiment as well. We've obviously got to talk about some of the headwinds or the negatives for the market as well. And even just off the heels of some really strong performance that we've seen in the last 2 weeks, in the last couple of days, obviously, we're still seeing globally a dramatic spike in COVID cases, and we're obviously seeing an increased amount of pressure for different countries and obviously different states within the U.S. here to issue further guidance on lockdowns. So that's going to be a hindrance, at least for a bit, for the economy as a whole. Unemployment figures have started to tick up again. So there's still plenty of headwinds, but I think essentially what has been largely priced in, at least in the last couple weeks, was the fact that we do have what appears to be two very effective vaccines that are likely going to be disseminated to the U.S. at some point next year. I think we can all hope that all Americans have availability to this sometime in the middle of next year, I think is probably the most optimistic case. I know that every once in a while we hear news sources reporting March. I think that more realistic expectations is obviously that the more vulnerable and frontline workers are going to get it first. And I'm sure most healthy Americans will probably be closer to April, May, June. But regardless, what that's done is taken out a lot of what was the uncertainty of the expected path of outcomes for equities going forward or any asset class. And it's chopped off that left tail to some extent. And so that's the pricing that you've seen, that pricing shift that you've seen, at least over the last couple of weeks, in terms of some really strong figures coming in November. And that's really what's pushed, kind of to loop it back to what the numbers we're seeing here in Q3, that 5.5% up for the S&P, that's why that looks a lot more like 13% now. Maybe I'll stop there. Any other questions on capital markets, anything through Q3 or obviously anything more recent before I jump into the actual trust performance figures. Okay, hearing none, I will jump ahead, but please feel free to stop me at any time if anybody has any questions. I'll move forward to page 13. Actually, let's go to 14. So here's where the trust assets sat at the end of Q3. You can see that, you know, we still have a bit of that overweight in the U.S. equity section of the portfolio versus fixed income. You know, that was, you know, it obviously those are still within policy guidelines. So there's nothing in the policy that dictates us having to do any kind of a rebalance here. But that overweight in domestic equity certainly helped the trust returns since the end of Q3, given that really strong run-up that we saw on U.S. equity returns. So that large overweight certainly played into our favor. That plus 3.49% relative to the target, as of yesterday, that looks a little bit closer to 4% overweight, given what we've seen in terms of the market run-up and where things sit now. I'm a little bit more inclined to say that we should probably try to consider some kind of a rebalancing activity. Now, I'll hold this conversation till later when Sarah and Dean go over their cash flow projections, because I think that might be a time where we can address the rebalancing activity in more detail, but just to kind of give you a sense of where we sit going into those conversations later in the meeting, we do sit overweight U.S. equity. So if there was a need to do some kind of transfer out of the fund, the likely place to pull from would be domestic equity and kind of capitalize on some of those gains that we've realized even since Q3. And in the bottom part of that table, that schedule of investable assets, you can see on the right-hand side the percent return for the year-to-date period. So we are into positive territory now. The trust sits at about $33.7 million, give or take, a return up about 2.56%. So just to give a bit of context, actually, where we sit through the end of yesterday, that 2.56 actually looks a lot closer to almost a 9%, believe it or not. So that the trust is up almost about 9% year to date in a year where we had a 30% drawdown. It's mind blowing. I know, well, at least to me, it is. But the market recovery has been absolutely astounding. But that just goes to show you what a month and a half of incredibly good returns can be. So again, it's still fluid. There's more volatility that is likely to come into the market here in the next month and a half, I would assume, to close out the year. But that doesn't negate the fact that returns have been extremely positive even since the print of these Q3 numbers, which are very positive. Stop there for any quick questions, maybe before I get into some underlying attribution and manager and composite comments. All right, feel free to jump in. I know these forums are tough to kind of get questions in, so feel free to interrupt me if anybody has anything. I'll move ahead a bit. This is our performance attribution page for the quarter, and how to read this page again, just a quick reminder. So that top green bar is the trust level performance for the quarter. And then the bottom four bars are what make up the bottom three bars are what make up the difference between that and the policy benchmark. So right here, we can see, you know, we had a really positive up 6.33% return for the quarter, a really strong absolute number. And that's what kind of pushed the trust back up into positive territory for the year-to-date period. And we really did have some strong attribution coming from all the underlying elements. We had some strong, the strategic asset allocation basically just says if you held everything at policy weight to the policy passive benchmarks, what would your return have been? And that's 5.52. then where do the additive points come from? Like, where do we get above our policy benchmark? Well, we get it from three locations: tactical asset allocation, style selection, and manager skill. And those added together are what give us the attribution that bridges those gap between the top two bars. And so we got some really positive attributes from actually all three of those underlying pieces this time around. A big chunk of that is that tactical asset allocation. I don't know if you all can see my cursor or not. Some of these platforms allow it and some don't. But I'm circling that 19 basis points for domestic equity. That's that overweight that I was talking about on the previous slide, how we were overweight domestic equity going into this period. Well, domestic equity was the strongest performer, plus we were overweight. So that's what gave us that positive, almost about 20 basis points of outperformance relative to the policy target. Style selection was minimal, but overall positive, particularly in international equity. That has more to do with style differences in the benchmarks. So if you're holding a little bit more value or a little bit more growth, for example, and the manager skill component of it is coming from the actual underlying peak managers versus their primary benchmark. So if they outperformed or not. And as you can see here, it was a great quarter where collectively the underlying the underlying managers that make up these composites outperformed in aggregate their respective benchmarks. So we had positive attribution, or 55 total basis points of alpha coming in during the quarter, a big part of that being driven by the fixed income composite. So if I move kind of one more page here, we can take a look at kind of how that all rolls up together. The total fund, again, if remember, this one's gross of fees, but so we can rank it versus peers. Peer ranking is always done on a gross of fee basis. But as you can see here, you ranked extremely favorable for the quarter to date period in the sixth percentile versus peers. Really improved our peer ranking for the year to date period, given the liquidity of this portfolio versus some other plans that are in this peer group. I would assume the year-to-date ranking now is well above median through November, just because public liquid markets have done so well. So I would really assume that our year-to-date ranking, if we could fast forward this through yesterday, is probably well above the median allocation there, or the median plan. So that number 61 would be a lot better than that, probably in the 30s or 40s, I would have to guess. And obviously still probably outperforming the policy benchmark. So overall, if taking this, what we know here, and taking what we know has happened so far in November, it's been a portfolio that's done really well through the recovery that we've seen this year. And that really is due to the liquid nature of the portfolio that we have, and that's been rewarded this year. Wasn't rewarded in March, obviously, and that's kind of what gave us that initial drawdown. But since then, in the subsequent months, it's held up very well. And you can, if we move a little bit farther forward to the net of fees performance pages, because that's really what matters is performance after fees. You can see quarter to date, besting the benchmark by about 70 basis points, and we actually had positive alpha from every single underlying composite. So you can see equity outperformed, both in domestic and international. Fixed income had great outperformance, real return, as well as GTAA. So we really did actually have a quarter where almost all the managers hit home runs against all the underlying benchmarks. In the subsequent pages, 21 and 22, I won't go over this in terrible detail unless there's specific questions on any underlying managers. Maybe just hit a couple, maybe one high point and one low point. And then if you all will have additional questions, feel free to jump in. You know, the high point of the year is obviously the one that probably pops out on the page is HarborCap. You know, they're up about 37% year to date. That's a large cap growth portfolio. Large cap growth has really been just the absolute leader in terms of style performance this year, led by some of the big tech names that we all have come to see, the Facebooks, Amazons, Microsoft, Netflix, Googles, Alphabet, whatever you want to call them. Those tech names really have driven driven the bulk of the positive performance this year, but outperforming the Russell 1000 Growth Index, which has a massive allocation to those stocks, by almost 13%. So that portfolio is ranking in the 8th percentile among peers. It's done extremely well. So that's a lot of positive alpha, coming from that portfolio. I'm probably on the one piece that's still a little negative in terms of the year-to-date performance is obviously Double Line. They've done an extremely great job post-March. Their portfolio has done in terms of adding a lot more yield than the passive benchmark has, but still versus that passive benchmark year-to-date, a slight bit of underperformance. It's again, one of those portfolios where it is certainly on the riskier side of publicly issued debt as compared to the treasuries or US treasuries for the most part that make up the Vanguard Total Bond, which just tracks the Barclays Aggregate Index. So Double Line's got a lot more things like emerging market debt, bank loans, and some international debt, and a little bit more risky issued debt here in the United States, like high yield, for example, that won't be held in the benchmark. Correspondingly, though, in times of the market participating on the upside, this portfolio is likely to do a lot better. And with yields still sitting super, super low, which you're essentially signing up for a return in U.S. denominated debt or U.S. issued debt, that is extremely low. I mean, the 30 years basically sitting at 1%. So really our income component going forward is going to come from a portfolio like Double Line. So they've been climbing out of that hole pretty well, and calendar year to date actually only down about 3% when they were down about almost 7% at the end of March, has actually been doing pretty well. But again, that's probably the low point in the portfolio for the year. So I know I talked a lot. I don't want to monopolize the meeting, but maybe I'll stop there and ask if there's any questions on anything related to capital markets and or performance.
If no one has a question, I have a couple for you, Ian.
Okay.
First, a granular one. Given that Harbor has knocked it out of the park now for a while, at what point, if ever, do you recommend a rebalancing to lighten up on that and spread some of that success around, just with a nod to a reversion to the mean concept?
Yeah, I think that, well, obviously, if there's any rebalancing activity that the trustees do decide to take place, and I think we should probably have that conversation, but we might want to hold off into having that till later on in the meeting when we discuss the cash needs of the plans. But that would be for sure a primary candidate to pull funds from. So we've got, in order to bring domestic equity back to target weight, you know, if we go back to page 14, I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but I would assume most of that overweight in domestic equity is due to Harbor Cap being much of that 3.5%. So you're exactly right. I think if we did do a rebalance, most of that overweight would come from something like Harbor Cap.
Okay, thank you. Makes sense. And just more of a macro question, and I don't know if other pension funds that you manage ever do the following, and maybe I'm channeling a little too much of Howard Marks, but do you have a put? Do you ever buy a put on a whole portfolio or a put on a broad index fund to just protect the pension fund against a falling through the floor black swan event? Something like that, or is that just too expensive to do?
You know, it's so in holistically what that's basically referred to in pension world is tail risk hedging, and it's something that it comes in waves. we hear about it probably once every 5 to 8 years when things start looking frothy. It historically, the data hasn't been very conducive to paying the basically premium that would be needed to hold that put long enough for it to pay off. So that's not to say it's not necessarily an idea that warrants further discussion, and that actually gets quite a bit of discussion at much larger pension systems. The problem with it is, and this almost comes down to more of a governance type of an issue, is that historically the plans or the systems that have done something in that arena, and I'll just label it tail risk hedging for now, because there's put options are one way. There's a whole other host of ways to institute tail risk hedging elements of the portfolio. The problem with it usually is that they take so long to pay off. You know, if you would have done it this last time, basically from the GFC, you would have essentially probably not paid that put off in terms of the premiums that you paid until right now, until essentially March happened. So you would have had to continually see a negative return associated with implementing that put option for essentially 10 years. And the unfortunate thing is most of the time, trustees change hands in pension land. And when they do, you know, sometimes new trustees come in that didn't vote for that in the first place. And then you've been paying those premiums for 6 years and somebody comes in and says, why are we doing this stupid put thing or this stupid tail risk hedging event? And they axe it off right at the wrong time. So they paid their premiums for 6 or 7 years to hold some insurance policy like that, but they didn't hold it to the point where they could actually get it paid off, because it is expensive to do so. So maybe to answer your question, it's a great idea, and it's something that I think is something that does get a lot of discussion, particularly from some of the larger pension plans up there. But most of them end up not implementing such strategies just because the payoff periods in between the times when you're paying those slow premiums down the entire time can take quite a bit of time. And logistically, from a governance perspective, it's one that's hard to see every single quarter. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it's something we've done a lot of research on. It's just something that can unfortunately take a long time to pay off.
I appreciate the answer. There's no right answer, of course. I'm just trying to think of ways right now, in my personal opinion, and again, people who are much smarter than I am, which doesn't take much, like Howard Marks or Jeremy Grantham, just hitting the drumbeat of the market's silly valuations at this point. The economy certainly is not nearly as rosy. There's such a disconnect there that I'm just trying to think of ways that we can protect both the union members and the LTD staffers, their pension fund, from that black swan event when things fall through the floor. And I appreciate your point of it's difficult to always be buying the insurance policy for when the house burns down, and it doesn't burn down for 10 years, but then you have a CalPERS event where they let go of it at the exact wrong time. So I don't know if it's feasible for a fund like this at 33, 34 million, but I just wanted to throw it out there.
Yeah, and it's a good discussion for sure. I think though, I guess the flip side of that coin is, you know, one, it's very hard to know when to put on. It's very hard to know when to take off. There is no right answer. Nobody's ever going to get it right. Even Howard Marks and Jeremy Grantham. I mean, Jeremy Grantham's the key, you know, he's a brilliant man, but his firm runs a strategy that essentially is the most contrarian strategy out there, GMO, for the past 10, 15 years. And their strategies have looked absolutely horrible, other than in years like 08, and they had great returns in like Q1 of this year. But since then, everybody's caught back up. So you know, that those contrarian type strategies have a place. I think it's really tough to put them a whole put option on an entire portfolio, because, you know, I would argue Q1 was a black swan event. You know, Q1 was, and yet the market has again repriced itself out of that black swan event, and we're up almost 8 or 9% through the end of October. Now, I'm not to say that I completely agree with you. The market dynamics and the economic dynamics are at a massive bifurcation right now. It still continues to amaze me that the markets are up as much as they are with as many headwinds as we have on the economic side of things. Yet paying that premium over the past, you know, instituting something like that directly after some kind of a black swan event that did reset PEs quite healthily, it's a tough time to sign up for that. So I think it's a great conversation to consider things like that. But ultimately, I think what is the most important are the things we can control in terms of rebalancing. So that's why for me, talking about rebalancing right now is probably the biggest lever that we have to control portfolio risk. Right now, we are overweight U.S. equities, which isn't the riskiest part of the portfolio, but it's certainly up there on the risk spectrum. So to me, it's time to say, okay, let's not get too greedy. Let's chop that red tail off that we're seeing, and let's bring things back to target. Let's bring our fixed income allocation back into target. And that's the target weight that we've looked at during our asset allocation exercise every year. And that's the target that we say we're comfortable with this level of return and this level of risk going forward. The farther we get away from that target, the more risk that gets introduced to the portfolio that's not dictated by the policy statement. So I think my first reaction is to say, let's get things back to target before we then think about insurance premiums or whatever to chop off the floor.
Thank you.
Yep, great question though. Anything else where I can pass it back to you, Mr. Chair?
Well, I'm not seeing any other activity out there. I just want to say thank you for the discussion on that. And thank you, Stephen, for bringing in interesting ideas, things that we hadn't had a discussion in a pension trust meeting about since I've been attending them in 2011 till now. You know, we're always trying to minimize the downside risk for our members and for the general public, since this is being paid with tax dollars. So any strategy we can develop and implement successfully, I think, is a good thing to have. So keep bringing the ideas forward. I'm excited to see that.
Definitely.
And then, yep. Ian, if you could stop sharing, if you're done with your report, then I can see people.
Yep, sounds good. And maybe we can have the rest of the rebalancing discussion later on in the meeting.
Yeah, I do anticipate that coming up. From what we see from our administrators. But let's see if the actuaries have some news for us. The agenda says nothing to report, but we'll give them an opportunity.
Sure. Thanks, Bill. There's nothing really formal to present or report today. We're kind of in a quiet period. As trustees know, we've done the biannual valuation a little bit earlier this year. We did the annual GASB financial update in September. So there's not too much on our plate at the moment, but certainly happy to address any questions if there's anything the trustees would like to discuss.
Do any of the trustees have any actuarial questions to bring forward? Speak now.
And for me.
Okay. Seeing none, I think we'll move forward and go to the report of the attorney. Jeff, if you have anything else to bring forward for this meeting?
I do not.
Okay. Anybody have any questions for Jeff otherwise? Nope. Okay, then we'll move to the report of the administrators.
I
I realized that I did not put the cash flow on this agenda. So we will start with the expenses and retirees since the last meeting. I sent that out to the trustees yesterday, I believe, or the day before. Everything's pretty typical. I don't see anything out of the ordinary in regards to expenses. In regards to retirees, I do see an increase in both, you know, the retirees since May. And you will see that some of the retirees on this date back to May, even though we've had a meeting since then, it was after that meeting that I received the application. So that's why you're getting things that were prior to a prior meeting. So I will open the floor for any questions.
Looks good, and thank you again, Sarah, for sending that along.
You're welcome.
I did have one thing, not necessarily a question about the expenses, but it's about how we pay the expenses, and that's bill.com.
Yes.
And we've been using that for a couple months now. Mm-hmm. And I was doing some approvals yesterday, I think, and there was one for the actuary and one for the administrator. And when I clicked approve, I think it approved them both. Like they were paired together. I couldn't approve one and then hold back on another. I don't know if I messed that up, but there was one I had a question about and I wasn't going to approve until I asked the question, but I wanted to approve the other one. But they both magically approved themselves. So I just was wondering if that anybody else had that experience yet.
I had the same experience, Bill. Yeah, and that's the same thing. I thought it was me who had done that because I got separate emails on each one. Although when you open up, you can kind of toggle through each one and it, you know, but this time the one I had approved on one, they were all approved and I thought, what did I do? I don't think that works. So then I tried it again. And the other thing I figured out quickly was that Bill.com is not supported by Internet Explorer. So I did have to do that on Firefox now, which is fine. Not a big deal. A lot of websites are doing that. So then I kind of chalked it up to that. So it's interesting. I thought it was me. I would not even have asked the question thinking it was my error.
Well, Sarah, why don't you find out which two invoices they were and look at how they were entered in the system to see if there's something we did on entering them that somehow paired them together so that the approval of one resulted in both of them being approved.
I was able to approve them all individually, so I'm going to go that it was operator error for that.
I'm wondering if there's a checkbox because I don't see that screen. I just see when I put them in. I know I had an issue with one of them where, and I believe it was, might have been the Hirschner Hunter, but there was like three pages in the PDF. And when I went through, only one page connected. So I had to, you know, delete that and redo it. So I'm not sure if it was, I'll double check how, I know I put them in separately, but I will double check and see. I'm wondering if there is a check mark box that maybe has all of them checked at one point, and maybe that's the issue.
Yeah, and I was fine with it. Bill may have had a question, but I was actually okay with it. So I was fine, but I do appreciate the technology. It makes the whole process so much easier. So thank you.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, so, the only concern I had about the one was there was hours charged, but there was no itemization of what the hours were for attached to the invoice. So I just think it was maybe a piece of paper didn't get scanned in to the system, or only the invoice was there, but not the backing information.
Interesting. Okay, I will double check that and get the itemized to you.
Appreciate it. Otherwise, it's been pretty smooth. So bill.com, I got a thumbs up. This is just a little thing. Anybody else have any questions about expenses or bill.com? Dean?
Now, I was going to say, if there's no questions, I'll go to the cash flow, but I'll let people see if they have questions. Okay, so I'm going to share my screen. Figure out if I share the right one. Okay. Okay, so you see my Excel spreadsheet on your screens?
Yep.
Okay, so this is my calculation of what I think we should transfer from the investment account to our plan checking account right now. As of October 31, the reconciled bank balance was almost $100,000. Then I did a projection of cash flows for the year. So I projected that we'll get about $3.1 million in contributions for the year. And I calculated that by this number right here. Back on July 1, we changed the way we were funding contributions, where now we're doing a monthly flat dollar amount plus so much per pay period. So I took the average of the pay periods from July 1 through the latest pay period, assumed we're going to have 26 pay periods for the year, calculated that as my expected contributions from payroll during the year. Then I just took our flat dollar amount contribution, multiplied that by 12 to get our expected flat dollar contribution. That's where I got the $3.1 million that's over here for our annual contributions. Expected benefits, similar. Here's the benefits we paid this last year. Most of them were just regular benefits. We had a couple thousand in EPA payments, but that's hardly worth mentioning. If we look, we started the year at about $231,000 for a monthly payroll. We ended the year about $258,000. So you can see that they're going up as we have more retirees. I assumed that if we did the same increase this next year, we'd probably get close to $280,000 a month by the end of the year. So I just used $265,000 as an average for the year of what I thought the monthly payrolls would be. Then for plan expenses, I just took the total expenses right off our 2019 trial balance for the full year. And that's how I got the expected cash outflows. So then I plugged in a proposed transfer number. We had talked earlier about trying to keep about 3 months worth of payroll payments in the checking account. I plugged a number in there that, you know, right now has us just slightly over 3 months worth of benefits. By the end of the year, if we did no transfers in the next 12 months, we'd be down to just a little over 2. At that point, I would figure we'd run through this exercise again and looking at another transfer. We also have the option of maybe looking at it more frequently, every 6 months or whatever. But if we just looked at it once a year, I would propose that we transfer $750,000 from the investment account to the checking account. And that should carry us through the next year without any trouble in terms of paying our bills and making our pension benefit payments.
Well, thank you, Dean. I did have a comment, and maybe David Collier could answer it. So these, you know, cash flow that's coming into the plan right now from the district, you're getting a flat payment and then you're getting payroll payments. The payroll payments should increase. By how much, I don't have the answer with me right now, but there is a recall of ATU members numbering, I don't know, how many total are we recalling? In January and
well, we're
December.
we're bringing 7 back starting basically December 1, and then approximately another 15 to 19 mid-January. So I would think that that might about maybe $13,000 increase if I did. I mean, if they're working full time, there'll probably be many operators, so I guess it could be a little less, but so maybe $10,000. Does that seem right, Christina?
Yeah, I think I had, yeah, 7 coming on in December, 20 coming on mid-January, and yeah, that was how I calculated it. And so, yeah, and so just with, depending on the timing of the year, it would be different how much the increase is, right? Because one's coming in January and the others are coming now.
So I don't know if that materially impacts your projections there, Dean, but I just wanted you to have the latest knowledge.
Yeah, and I don't think it does. You know, if we assumed 10,000 more a month for 10 months out of my 12-month projection, that's going to get us 100,000 more in contribution. Well, if I just up this cash transfer by 100,000 to see, you know, what that does to our ending checking balance a year from now, that still puts us at 2.5 months of payroll covered in the checking account. So if we leave this at 750 and we actually end up with 100,000 more there than we're thinking of, we're still not going to be sitting on so much cash we'll wish we hadn't transferred that amount. So I think 750 still makes sense.
It's just, you know, the more cash you pull out of the fund, the less it has a chance to earn. So, you know, only want to pull out as much as we need to. Cash is its own hedge, I suppose.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is Steve's hedging strategy.
Yeah.
He just didn't know this was
so we can look at it that way if we want to feel comfortable about having a little extra cash in the checking account. I personally have no qualms about what you're proposing, but I would open the floor up to the other trustees.
I'm fine with it.
I am as well.
Me too.
So I
wouldn't we be able to at any point being able to make those transfers at another monthly meeting, quarterly meeting rather, if we got into a dangerous balance that we thought were going to be getting in the way of making our payroll. Retirees.
I do believe that's true. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, another option is look at transferring half of this now, and next meeting or two we can look at, do we want need to transfer the other half?
Well, if we were going to use this opportunity to rebalance too, is this number that we're proposing enough to get us within a comfortable benchmark for Ian? So I'd like to hear Ian's opinion about this number and if that satisfies everything we need to do.
Yeah, I think I'd probably be comfortable with the full 750 transfer. I mean, it's not such a material amount where, I guess to answer your question, Bill, additional transactions are going to need to be required to get us all the way back to target anyway. So 750 out and heading toward the cash account isn't going to get us all the way there. So we're going to have to do some additional rebalancing to tighten up the targets. So I don't think that they're other than the argument of not wanting it to be in cash, but the amount itself isn't sufficient enough to bring us back to target.
Okay. Thank you, Ian. Do any of the other trustees have any comment on the proposed cash transfer? Hearing none, I suppose we need a motion to make this happen. So I will entertain a motion to transfer $750,000 out of the pension trust into the checking account.
They'll all make that motion to transfer the cash of $750,000 from our account into our cash account from our investment account.
Second.
We had a competition for seconding. I think it was really John Hunt that got there. Not that it was a race. So with that, I guess I will go all those not in favor, please speak up. Not hearing anybody, so the motion passes. And then I think we need another motion to let Ian continue to rebalance the account to the targets. Ian, is there any way you want this motion to be specifically framed?
No, I think as long as maybe a motion to, and again, just for trust, just to remind the trustees how this works, I have to send the directive to Bill for him to sign for it to go to the custodian bank for it to be executed. So I guess that the motion is just for me to prepare the directives to rebalance the trust back to target weights.
Well, I'll make that motion for you to start working on the directives for rebalancing the pension trust back to target weights.
I'll second it, Bill.
Christina seconds. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, I'll go all those not in favor. Hearing none, the motion passes.
That's, I think, all we had for our TPA report.
Okay. So with that, we can stop the screen share and we can get into new and unfinished business. We have our standing item there, and I can certainly report that we haven't done any work on that. It's been on the back burner. I do believe we did finish our deferred compensation project, and that has been implemented. And everybody has been transferred into their new funds. So that was something that was in front of this trust, and I just wanted to update everybody that that project has going forward. I think there's one a particular issue that still needs doing, and that is the Roth 457 update. And we're attempting to continue to include that in our plan, hopefully next year. If David has any other commentary on that particular one, I will be quiet.
Yeah, I had a conversation with Valak yesterday, and they are reviewing just to make sure that the Roth option, and Jeff, you might know this, but if it's part of the plan already, if it is, then all they'll need is an email, and it'll be by March 1st, I believe is what they told me, or end of first quarter. So I guess April 1st, it would take effect, but it could be even sooner. So.
I don't know the answer to that, actually. I'll have to look and see what the plan says about Roth.
Okay.
So I suppose we will hear back from Jeff on that at our next meeting.
All right. Yeah, and Valak's looking at it as well, so.
Okay, and David, you had put out an email about adding Valak as a guest at our next meeting?
Yeah, so I know we've talked about that in the past because, again, the 401A account really does fall under the pension plan and the purview of the trustees. And I know we've talked about that, and they did give me a, kind of like Ian's update of, our investments and things like that. So I was talking to them about having them come more in the middle of this meeting, I guess. So, about now as we're finishing up the ATU so that they could provide that information, how the investments are doing, and, doing that on an annual basis is what, we were thinking. Obviously they could do it. I mean, they could do it at every meeting if we wanted, but again, as Ian does, you know, they could let us know any investments that are on their watch list, you know, anything that we needed to change so that, again, the trustees could be looking at that. So.
Well, I do think we need to bring them in and hear from them. It's been a long time and we've gone through a lot of changes. I don't think we need to hear from them more than once a year. You know, with Zoom, it's always tricky to do timing, but if we can shoot for the middle where we bridge the ATU and the salary plan, I think that fits the schedule all right. It would be included maybe at the end of the ATU plan agenda, since all the same players are on the next meeting. And then we could close down the ATU meeting and you guys can take over. Does that work as a timing for everyone?
Sounds like a good plan.
Okay. With that, what else do we have here? Open discussion, just an update. We, you know, COVID-19, we had a cancellation of our annual training. So that got pushed to next year. So that particular conference is already paid for next year. So the expenses should be a little less next year, not a, you know, a significant amount, you know, in terms of overall plan. But that's already prepaid. So let's not lose that in our mental awareness there. The only thing that isn't paid is flights. And again, those should be cheaper because it will be held in Denver. So that will be good. I'm looking forward to that. That's my only, you know, open discussion I have. If anybody else has any, I'll let you speak. Nobody's jumping on, so I would imagine we are concluding this meeting. So let's do our check of the calendars and see when we want to schedule the next meeting. I'll give everybody a chance to look into February, I imagine. And the 12th has always been a hot date.
Very funny.
I will say that Valak told me that they need 45 days. So it would need to be actually after the 15th for them. Sorry, Bill.
I mean, 17th and 18th are open for me.
I would prefer we not do it on the 17th, which is a Wednesday, which is typically a busy day already for David, AJ, Christina, and me with LDD activities and Camille.
Yes, Thursday works great for me. Wednesdays are harder.
I'm good Thursday too.
As well.
And
that can work too.
Good on Thursday. Good Thursday. So Thursday 10 a.m.
That works.
I imagine it'll still be Zoom by then. you know, I'm not gonna be overly optimistic. So I guess we will plan on February 18th at 10 a.m. via Zoom for the next ATU LTD Pension Trust meeting. And with that, that concludes the ATU LTD Pension Trust meeting. I thank you all for being here. I wish you best of luck with your next meeting.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks,
Bill.
Thank you all. Have a great, happy Thanksgiving.
You too, John.
Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you all.
So I have up the agenda for the salaried employees retirement plan. I would entertain a motion if everybody has had a chance to read the minutes of the August 20 meeting. And if there are any changes to that, to those minutes.
I move approval, Christina.
Thank you, AJ. Do I have a second?
We lose
Steven. So I'll second. And I guess unless we're gonna wait for Steven to rejoin. I don't know if he's planning on rejoining. I will continue. So I guess since AJ made the motion and I seconded, I say all in favor. Aye.
Aye.
All right. The next on the agenda is report of the investment consultant. So Ian, did you want to share something?
I would say that the conversation we had earlier to the portfolio break to you applies to the salary plan. I do think a rebalance here is also necessary, but maybe we can hold that conversation until we go over the cash report like we did for ATU. But other than that, all the performance comments hold, unless there's any additional questions.
Stephen is jumping back on. He was confused by the 1:30 executive session. So.
Oh, okay. Great. We'll wait for him then.
And Christine, I'll have no other questions. I think the previous report by Ian was fine.
Okay, awesome. Stephen, thank you for rejoining. We approved the minutes, but I want to give you a chance in case there was something that you had as a change to the minutes. AJ and I had gone through and approved it, but I'm going to give you a chance in case there's something you had to say about those minutes.
Thank you. I'm good.
Okay. And then we moved on to Ian, and Ian identified that there wasn't anything new from the what he had with regards to the salary plan from what he presented to the ATU, but that there would be a potential need to rebalancing and that we should actually table that until we go through discussion on the expenses, unless you would had something that you would like to have him go over. Stephen, that's a question for you, whether you have any. AJ said there's nothing for her.
Sorry, my button was not working. I'm good. Thank you, Christina.
Okay, thank you. We have a report of the actuary, and this has nothing to report, but I just wanted to check with Scott to see if there's anything, or Lacey, if there's anything that you would like to share, or if people had questions for either one of them.
Sure. If there's no questions, I think the only thing we'd have to share is that kind of the annual benefit statements that we prepare are just about ready to go. We were just holding off on them for after this meeting. In case any wording modifications might be desired based on discussion in the executive session kind of topic today. But otherwise, those will be coming shortly after this meeting.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions? All right, hearing none, moving on to the report of the attorney. Again, nothing that Jeff has here listed to report, but Jeff, if you have anything to report or if anybody has a question for Jeff.
I have nothing.
All right, moving on to the administrator's report. I will stop sharing my screen did you want to share your screen, Dean?
Well, I think I'm going to do the expenses and retirees first.
Okay.
And then we'll have Dean show the cash flow. Okay. It looks like the bill's pretty typical. Actually, all typical. And then the retirees, we don't have I have more than what's actually on here. What is on here is actually what I had received and have started prior to this meeting. But I have, of course, we're going through some retirees that we are retiring at 60, I believe, which is an early retirement, and we're going through those. So I have approximately four that are not on here, and that's going to lead us into that cash flow report, because these are going to be some retro payments back to when the person hits age, the month after their age 60.
Sarah, is that related to the executive session?
Correct.
Okay, awesome.
Which is also kind of related to the cash flow.
Okay, got it.
Okay, so I'm gonna share my screen once again. And we have an analysis very similar to what we saw at the ATU. I have the current balance reconciled at 1031. I have expected annual contributions determined pretty much the same way. I use the plan's fiscal year basically to come up with, you know, what our flat dollar amount is and what my expected average payroll contributions are to get about $1.5 million of expected contributions over the next year. Expected annual benefits, same sort of story. I looked at what the pension benefits paid were, how much they increased, which wasn't a whole lot during the year, and assumed $135,000 for each month. I took the actual plan expenses for the last fiscal year, added that to those to get the total expected cash outflows. We have, as Sarah mentioned, four people right now who are working on getting their pension set up, and they would receive retro benefits, and the retro benefits for those four people add up to about $115,000. So I've added that in here as an extra cash outflow. And using the same sort of approach we used in ATU, if we transferred $550,000 to the checking account, this balance here gives us, when, you know, if that was added to our 1031 balance, we would have about 4 months worth of benefits in checking, but a year from now we'll be down to 2.1. So the salary plan is dropping faster than the ATU plan. So that raises the question, since we're getting clear up to a little over 4 months worth of benefit, if we make a $550,000 transfer, it may be more likely that we want to do this one in two stages, a half now and half 6 months from now. But you guys can decide if you want to do that or transfer the whole 550 now or do something different.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody have any questions or discussion about the thoughts related to the amount of transfer or whether we make the transfer in one or two different segments?
Christina, I don't have a preference. I don't know if there's a lot of pros and cons to that. I don't know, maybe side of the plan that it might be easier to just make the one transfer, that way the record keeping a track or something and us know what we did when we did it, it kind of aligns nice and clean. But I don't think, okay, unless Christina you have a concern, I don't care one way or the other.
And I think Ian was going to talk a little bit about the rebalancing as well related to the portfolio and his expertise.
That's right.
Yeah, I think, you know, honestly, kind of just looking at this pro rata, you know, it appears to me you're almost in a pretty identical situation to ATU. So I would say that more transactions would be necessary to bring, if the trustees decided to also rebalance the plan back to target. 550 is not going to get us all the way there. There's going to be an additional transactions needed. So I guess what I'm saying is either doing the whole amount now or half now, half later it doesn't necessarily make a big difference in terms of the rebalancing portion of it. So I don't think I'm probably indifferent also on if you do half now, half later, or if you just did the pool thing now, we'd still need additional directives to bring the fund back to target, is what I'm saying.
Okay. You probably need to, you'd move the 550 out, and then we do, so we do two motions similar to what we did with the ATU plan. Okay. Steven, do you have any thoughts on this?
I'm fine with doing the transfer in one lump sum.
Excellent. Well, given that, I will entertain two motions, one for the transfer from the investment portfolio to our cash portfolio, our cash bank account, and then the other, the rebalancing of our dollars from the bank back to targets.
So if it's two motions, let me, should we do both in one, maybe do them separately, Christina? So
okay, sure.
So let me approve the transfer.
Okay, so AJ
in one sum.
Okay, AJ is making the motion to transfer from the investment portfolio 550 to our bank.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Our motion passes. The next motion would be to rebalance back to targets and to give Ian the direction that he can prepare a directive to rebalance back to targets. Does someone want to, I guess I can make that motion. I will motion that Ian can prepare a directive to rebalance the portfolio back to targets.
Second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, I think I heard both Stephen and AJ, so the motion passes. And the checking on any new or unfinished business that people wanted to talk about?
I don't know. I mean, that's not for today's discussion, Christina. Mm-hmm. Maybe the next meeting, if you know, appropriate. David, maybe we could have a conversation about our whole, part of the actuarial report or something. Are we on target? Do we need to take any different action? This plan has very few members still working, right? So I think it's just kind of for information, Stephen doesn't know who's in the plan or who's not in the plan of our employees. So I think it would be really good at some point, and it could be sent out as a written report if we don't want to take time, but I just think that it's something that I think it's worthy to have knowledge and make sure that the decisions we're making is aligning, because ultimately some action will have to be taken as fewer and fewer members. I think we've had, like was mentioned by Kermit Stokes, more employees applying for retirement on this plan. So I just want to make sure we're on target, if we need to be making any different investments decisions or contributions by LTD, that we're on target and that we understand those costs, because on the other end, then Christina works with those on the budget side as well. So not sure what the best way of doing it, but hopefully I've explained myself clear enough with so many different words.
So AJ, I put in my notes to have on the next meeting an agenda item to discuss the salaried plans. I'm not quite sure what to put.
I guess it's a closed plan, right? So what they're wanting to make sure that given the actuarial analysis, that our contributions are going to cover, because we're having a reduction in the number of people that are contributing to the plan, on an ongoing basis.
Yep.
Right. And one way to think of that is, as you know, with the contribution strategy, it's there's both like the flat dollar amount and the amount that is tied to actual new new payroll, new benefits being earned in the plan. So we could kind of do a little bit of a step back and educational session on here's what the profile still looks like of the plan. It's obviously a more mature plan given that it's closed. And here's how that's projected to evolve over the next decades and how kind of the, or years and then decades, how the contribution strategy kind of aligns with that. So I think that'd be a probably just a informational session more than anything, but might be a nice, nice time to do it.
That would be very helpful, Scott. Thank you.
And thanks, Sarah, for adding that to the agenda for next time. So any other items that people
want to and maybe we also talk about, David was reminded me that the defined contribution plan, that it might be good to also talk about that. I think that's something we have not spent a lot of time at this meeting, David, talking about.
Right. We so we just negotiated. So our public safety folks were administrative employees. They opted to be part or to bargain. So they are now part of a separate ATU contract, and we did not put them in that closed ATU plan, but we put them on the admin DC plan, which they were already on. But we agreed with ATU to change the vesting schedule from a 7-year vesting to a 5-year tiered vesting, so 20% per year. So I believe that needs to
be and the other thing, David, that is just a tentative agreement that
to go to
the board. It has to, so it's not an approved, but I think by February the board will have made a decision on that.
So David, is this part of, so I just want to make sure I understood what you said. The renegotiation, would be part of neither the salaried retirement employees closed plan or the ATU regular plan. They would be part of what I have, or you have, no, not you, but what I have, which is just a regular defined contributions as a benefit.
Correct. They would be part of the defined, you know, they came in as administrative employees, so they're part of the DC plan, and
so they would not change in any way, Christina. It would
okay.
They were never part of the admin DB plan.
No.
No, none of them were here. Have been here long enough. Okay. Yeah, we brought them in.
Part of the AG plan either. It sounds like.
Correct.
Okay.
And the other thing about that, I think, David, one of the conversations we would have about that would be if the vesting period changes from 7 years to 5 years, what's the financial impact to that? We would kind of have, I mean, we'll have that for the board of directors, but it's good to bring it here as part of any considerations in case that's a cost.
I'm also noticing that Carol would like to speak.
Thank you.
I don't even see her on here. So I don't know how to do that. I don't even see her on the list.
Camille is on. She's probably not listening in. Let's see.
Sorry, I wasn't watching. I can pull her over.
Okay, thank you.
There you go.
Carol, you can unmute yourself now.
Thank you. I have had several questions and I haven't been able to participate in the ATU, in the admin part, and I'd like you to fix that. Also, the information on the LTD website for this meeting has not been updated. It's actually the February 12th meeting. That you guys need to be fixed for the next meeting, please. I guess my question was, how much, back to the issue with regard to the admin cash flow, how much of the fixed portion that LTD is providing to the pension fund is available right now, i.e. could you use that money and put off the cash transfer from the pension trust? Or some portion of that, i.e. put all of the money that the LTD cash that LTD is required to contribute this year in right now. And then that if that would put off the amount you needed to transfer to the pension trust, from the pension trust to the cash balance.
Well, in the salary plan, the monthly flat dollar contribution is about almost $90,000. So that's, I think, an LTD's decision on whether they would want to fund that $90,000 through June 30 all now, or if they want to continue to do it monthly.
Well, I don't think from LTD's point of view, there's a whole lot of gain to, I mean, what, you're making about a half a point on interest in the LGIP. So that might be more interest than would be less interest than would be earned from the pension trust cash transfer.
Christine, I'm interested in your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I actually, you know, I don't see any disadvantage to it. I mean, it's basically, if she's talking about between now, so see how many months is that between now, 11, like 7 months worth of the transfers that we already, that we currently do, that would more than cover the balance that that we're having. We'd still have to do the rebalancing. So based on the portfolio not being in balance, but I don't know that it makes one difference one way or the other, because we would be either sending the money into the investment account, right? And then we would be, it would be balanced within the investment account, or we'd be sending it to Kernet Stokes to for the cash account, and that would just build up in the cash account. So, I mean, whether we do a one-time transfer now of the 550, or whether we do, you know, a cash transfer either now from LTD to there, I mean, either could work, but I don't know that they're going to have any material difference one way or the other, which methodology we choose.
So this is what I think. If we transfer 550 now, mm-hmm. my cash flow projections are assuming that those next 7 months at $88,000 are hitting the checking account as well.
Yes.
So they would just hit all at once, which would lessen our need for cash immediately, but still, if we didn't transfer the 550, we're ending up at the end of the year with 315,000 in it. If we did transfer the 550, we're ending up at the end of a year from now with 315,000 in the checking account, which means a year from now, if we don't transfer the 550, we'll be negative by 150,000 or so in there. So we're still going to have to do a transfer at some point, but it might be 6 months down the road now instead of now that we have to look at that transfer.
So what's 6 months worth of interest in the pension trust account?
Right.
Is that the same amount of cash, the same amount of interest that LTD would earn on that $80,000 or $90,000 a month? I'm saying that pension trust would earn more money, and you could do the transfer in May instead of now.
Yeah.
I think the only thing I'd add is the flip side of that could also be relevant. You could lose, I mean, there's no guarantee that the markets will continue to go up in the pension plan from now until May. So I guess that there's two sides to that coin. You can take the 550 out now at the same time that we're rebalancing the plan, which does two things at once, and it reduces additional transaction costs later on in May if we were going to transfer there. The second issue is there is no guarantee that the pension will make more money than the checking account in the next 5 to 6 months. I can't say that to you all. There's a probability attached with the pension potentially losing money over the next 5 to 6 months. That's you know, outside of the control of anybody here. So I guess the discussion hinges on the security of taking out the 550 now, and knowing that is going to be placed in something that's going to earn little to no interest, giving interest rates right now. There you could save that in the pension plan and potentially earn more, but there's a potential for losses as well.
Right. So if we do what we're currently doing, Ian, then as we're paying into the pension fund, the investment fund, then we're doing some of the dollar cost averaging though to increase the investments, right?
Well, right now, those contributions are going straight into the checking account.
Yeah, they're cash.
Yeah, I think what Dean is mentioning is that we're currently the contributions and the benefits are all being paid out of the checking account. So there is no infusion into the pension plan currently.
Okay.
The way that the contributions and the benefits payments are being made. So no, we're not necessarily having any dollar cost averaging into the pension plan. I think it really just hinges on whether the trustees feel that it is more, they're more comfortable with taking the 550 out now, or if they would prefer to take it out later and potentially, you could potentially make more in that particular amount of time than checking, but you could potentially lose it more as well.
What is your sense of the best approach, Ian, as an investment advisor?
I think that given the way, and again, you know, my job isn't necessarily to time the markets by any may, you know, if anybody could do that, they'd be making a lot more money than I do. But, what I would say that to me, I think I'd probably be more comfortable with the cash transfer happening now, simply because, you know, since April markets are up, you know, almost 20 to 25% since mm-hmm. April. Mm-hmm. So it seems like to me, if you're going to try to anticipate when we could potentially see further headwinds to the market, mm-hmm. We know that the likelihood of that happening going forward, it is at some kind of probability. And if you wanted to go by the kind of trim your winners mm-hmm. methodology, well, then right now seems like a fairly good time to trim the winners.
Right, because you're locking in your gains is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what he's saying.
Exactly.
Okay. So, I mean, given that, as trustees, do you have any change to what we were, I mean, from what we already have passed?
Christina, I don't have strong feelings one way or the other. I think I defer to you on that and your expertise.
Then I would go with what Ian has recommended, and the motion that we did stands, unless Stephen has an opposition to that.
I don't. I certainly appreciate Carol's question. I think it's legitimate, but I also feel the market, as I said in the earlier session, the market, as Ian said, is very frothy by most measures, if not all. And I'd rather be conservative with the money than trying to squeeze out an extra few points over 6 months. That's my personal opinion.
Thank you. All right, Carol, did you have any other questions?
I want to know if the minutes are actually available to the public anyplace.
I would have thought that they would have been posted.
I just checked it. Camille was off, so I can see that the information that Sarah Long sent over was the correct information on the agenda. But then as I look at it, I think somebody on staff maybe clicked on the wrong folder, but Carol, we'll go and update that. Camille has access to that. Sorry, Camille, I guess when you're off, we kind of have other issues. So we'll update that, Carol. I don't think it's hard for us to get a handle on. So we can do that quickly.
But are the minutes there?
Yes, the minutes are there. I just opened up the correct folder. And we do have all the updated information, but I noticed the one posted on our website. I think the staff member grabbed the wrong folder and grabbed a previous folder. So Kermit Stoke did send over the correct information. So we want to make sure that's posted promptly. So we'll make sure that's done. Carol, if not within a couple hours, definitely by the end of the day, but I don't know if Camille's listening in and could chime in.
So where
I am,
are the
I can
then?
I can get that swapped out.
Where are the minutes then? Because I'm looking at the LTD website right now for the meeting, and I don't see any indication of where the minutes are.
So Carol, my understanding with what AJ just said is that they're going to be posted shortly. That Camille was out, and so
I understand that, but I don't see where the minutes tie into the events calendar, or am I looking in the wrong place to be looking for minutes of the meeting, prior meetings?
The entire packet is the old packet, Carol. So Camille can upload that shortly now that she's aware that that was not done correctly. So know that we'll move that. We'll post all the correct information. That was part of this meeting, yes.
But it's not, clearly.
Carol, it's at the Pension Trust Committee meeting. If you go to the Pension Trust Committee meeting and click on that link,
on the events calendar, I'm looking at it.
Okay, if you scroll down a little bit, if you're on the events calendar and you click the Pension Trust Committee meeting, if you scroll down a little bit, underneath it says virtual meeting details to come. The yes. committee will hold two non-public executive sessions. Then you yes. see a quarterly investment performance
yes.
and a pension trust agenda. They're telling you those are yes. wrong. That is the wrong. Carol, stop. Stop. That's the wrong stuff. And they will be posting the correct stuff after this meeting.
But where on those four lines are the minutes?
They're saying
there were no minutes.
You're correct. There are no minutes. The minutes were not posted because all of that information is incorrect. It's from a past meeting. They will post them after this meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. All right. So at this point, we already have a date and time in place for the next meeting, which is on February 18th and the Thursday. And at this point, the trustees of the Lane Transit District Salary Employees Retirement Plan will now meet in executive session pursuant to ORS 192.662F, which allows the trustees to meet in executive session to consider information or records that are exempt from by law from public inspection because the information and records are confidential or privileged under Oregon law. Representatives of the news media and designated staff shall be allowed to attend the executive session. All other members of the audience are asked to leave the room. Representatives of the news media are specifically directed not to report on any of the deliberations during the executive session, except to state the general subject of the session as previously announced, which is the memorandum on retroactive benefit issues. No decision is going to be made in the executive session. The executive session is expected to be last about 15 to 30 minutes. And at the end of the executive session, we will be adjourned. So does somebody want to make a motion to move us to executive session?
I move.
Second.
All right. Thank
you. So everyone's clear, we're going to leave this meeting and go to the executive session number 2 link and sign in.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Sarah.
No, but question about that. The invite I got says for 1:30. So I should ignore the timestamp on it and just go into it now.
Correct.
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 Got it.